Let's go. I got my man fucking Jamie over here. We're fucking running clown cardio. We got Cody Saunders, who's a fucking businessman. We got Sam, dude. Sam's teaching and he's fucking brilliant. You don't think I don't need anybody else? Let's start the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Comedy Fix. I'm Chris Alvarado. I'm here with my two main men, Jamie Parkinen and Sam Miller. And we have a special guest today, somebody that I've gotten to know pretty well over the years. I coach him on a couple of teams. We've just become friends otherwise. And he's doing a lot for improv on the West Side and everywhere worldwide, but on the West Side specifically. That's that. Everybody, welcome Cody Saunders. Hey, Cody.
Hello, everyone. Right. Yeah. Really enjoying doing a lot of improv here in the indie scene of Westside Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Buddy, let me ask, because Chris won't do it. Why do you like Chris as a coach? I know you work with him a lot and he's kind of in your circle. Feel free to speak candidly.
Yeah, for sure. I came up through the Westside Comedy Theater's program, their classes 1 through 6, and somewhere along the way, maybe toward the end of that, maybe even as what they would consider an elective, maybe just a workshop, I had something with Chris, and this is 5 years back or so, 5 or 6 years back, and just the approach at that time, and I think Chris has talked about this before a little bit, was about believability and about really investing in your character and really making moves that were real and making big moves. And that was still kind of the take care of yourself first kind of era. And that stuff sort of really started to resonate with me beyond what had previously just my own mind really been, oh, we get up there and make silly jokes and try to make more funny jokes by referring to things from the past and doing these other tools and techniques that I've learned with some of the improv. But, and while I was told to have the relationship, establish it and everything else, I didn't feel like I was acting and becoming a character until sometime after first hearing this idea even being kind of presented to me in the improv forum around the time of like kind of working with Chris. And that's the initial kind of phase, the initial impression. Then the pandemic hit and things kind of went weird. And I didn't enjoy doing goofy, silly, haha improv at all on Zoom. It was, to me, kind of horrible. But we found a formula, Chris did, really. And I'd say we, as in the people who regularly attended it and work with Chris and we're in that same process all together, of having two people on the screen and just having it out in dialogue, one-on-one, real, about each other, about those characters, dialogue. And it was emotional, it was jarring. I would walk, like get up after like sitting down for a scene or whatever and just kind of be still shook in some character I had found or having reacted to some scene I saw. So that really cemented this thing. And then since the pandemic, we've brought that form to the stage with one of our groups in its own way, you know, kind of building on that and changing that, adding elements, doing things you do live. And the process we've gone through in the year and a half or so, 2 years, geez, 2.5 years, because we started in the backyard before theaters were open. That group in particular has been the biggest reason that I continue to work with Chris. I mean, that form, I don't know who else I would work with on that form right now. It would be weird, very weird. So that's one reason. And then another group I'm in just also had encountered Chris, been to the workshops. The person who kind of founded that group, it's a musical improv group, chose Chris as well. And that just was like, great, that works well for me. That works well for me too. We can hone in on form. I know it'll bring relationship, which musical improv thrives on. And we have a musical accompanist that, of course, is with us as well a lot of the time, sometimes alone and sometimes together. Anyway, that's a long answer.
No, that's great.
All the elements that lead to the current time I spent with Chris.
And this won't just be like a Cody interview. We'll talk a lot of stuff here. But I do want to say Cody was one of the first people. He was around when, and you've, well, Sam and Jamie, you've been around for this whole thing. But like when I started to be like, wait, I think there's another way or there could be more. Cody was right there in my transitional phase and has seen me go through many phases now. But not only was he there for that, I saw in him, he became unlocked. And I don't, Cody, I'm not sure how much acting experience you have, but I know professionally you're not an actor.
Like zero, like zero.
And that's what was so cool was seeing non-professional actors, people who didn't have that training, begin to unlock emotionally. It was really beautiful to watch, really beautiful. And Cody started to find these levels in his performance that was like, whoa, whoa. And since then, though, Cody, you've grown so much. You can do the funny, you can do the singy, you can do the more serious stuff. It's been really cool to watch you grow. And I'm happy to have been a little part of that.
Yeah, happy to be a part of it too. The culture is just amazing to me. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you kick yourself for like, why wasn't I doing this for 2 decades, 3 decades prior?
Cody, how important is, and this is for everybody, how important, Jamie, Sam, is it to have an indie scene in improv? You know, we talk about stage time a lot. Like, oh, you're like, you know, when I was coming up, well, you got to get stage time, stage time, stage time. But it's like, yeah, I see some benefit, but like, I've also done a lot of crappy indie shows for nobody or for another crappy team.
Okay, pause. Oh, sorry. I need a definition. What? How do we define indie?
I guess
Versus what's the what's it's either indie or it's mainstream. What
well,
are
indie, I guess
improv
indie
studios?
is a little different these days because all the larger, most of the institutions have gone away. But back in the day, it was either you were affiliated with one of the larger comedy institutions, UCB, Second City, IO, that come to mind. So if you were on an IO house team, that wasn't considered indie because you were, the theater was promoting you. You were put together by the theater. That's another huge component. And actually, West Side used to have this too, right? And so you were a house team as opposed to an indie team. Independent meant you were probably picking your own friends to play with, the people you enjoyed. You were selecting your own coach, right? Because at the other theaters, you're assigned a coach. And then you also have to find your own stages to play on, Sam.
Yeah, it's interesting because there may be levels to indie, right? And I think I'm in Philadelphia currently, and we're going through some of this stuff where, you know, you have your IO, they own the stage, they put together the team, right? There might be an indie night at that theater where they offer the stage to teams that aren't affiliated with the theater, right? Some theaters might have like an indie night kind of a thing. You also might have a theater that's offering classes but doesn't own a stage. So now they're putting together, you know, sort of maybe irregularly scheduled performances. Maybe some of those are house teams, maybe some of them are more indie. And then I think, you know, what we probably most think about with indie is someone who's unaffiliated with the theater, finding a stage that's unaffiliated with the theater and just putting up a night for itself, right? And I think there are a lot of really cool things about indie, which is you can find really cool spaces, which I think are underutilized in improv a lot of times. You can do things that are a little bit more experimental or specific or niche, but I do think it's important to have, and it's something that, you know, since the pandemic, I'm sure a lot of different cities are kind of having this issue where some theaters closed, some people stopped, right? Now we have to get new audience members in the seats. A lot of arts institutions like theaters are having problems getting that attendance back. And so this idea of like coming out of the pandemic and trying to like regenerate an indie scene is really kind of interesting to me. And I'm sure probably a lot of listeners can relate to that.
Cody, I'm gonna tee you up here. I think I've told this story maybe even on the podcast, but I've definitely told Jamie and Sam separately. 99.9% of our communication is through text, maybe an email here or there. But one time we had a phone call during the pandemic, I think maybe towards the end of it, where you were like, is there a version of all of this where I just hire a coach and invite people to play because I want to do this more? And I want to select the people I want to play with. Like, that was such a funny, interesting moment for me, because before then it was like, no, like six people had to like gather, and then they had to like figure out who the coach was, or maybe one of them had a relationship, and then they would split that fee and this and that. And Cody, you were like, I want to play more and more often now. Can we do this? And I had never heard that before. It doesn't seem so crazy when I say it now, but like back then it was like there were certain ways to go about it. Tell me about that spark for you, that moment that happened.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess to say step one is lucky enough to have the disposable income for this. Step two is finding I was super in love with the entire art. And then three was just like, yeah, I wanted to be able to provide a space and an opportunity for people to just come and perform at the end of a very like kind of crappy economic situation and scenario for a lot of people. And for, I think it was a good 6 months to 9 months or so. Yeah. Just kind of like decided I'll just pay for this cost and have people join and come. And that's kind of how it went for two groups, actually. Now, initially, the location was free. It was my backyard. So it was just, we're just there. And later it kind of started incorporating into theater. And then as I guess later when we congealed on what these teams really are, everyone, we know who's in it, it became everyone just kind of pulling equally. But I always kind of upfront everything and just do that. And I think there's often a person on a team who's running the logistics, collecting the money, handing it out. But yeah, this initially was just, let me just try to do it on my own and just see where this goes. Now it's improv, so there wasn't a point where it's like, I can find a way to break even on this and not just be throwing money at a thing and spending a lot of money on it. And that's what reality was for me. I didn't make a leap to create a business.
Which, like, Sam, I really appreciated. I mean, obviously, I'm appreciating that Cody is taking the hit on this financially. But, you know, just whatever his situation, he felt comfortable doing that. And because of that, it fast-tracked us to this fun place where we're just like playing regularly. There wasn't all these other lines of communication. It was just boom, Cody and I. Like, it was really, really nice. And for people who might have been on the fence, or like he said, were kind of on hard times financially, it gave them this opportunity to come and just play right now. It was so cool.
I think it's awesome. Yeah. I mean, a couple of things occurred to me. One, like, we don't talk about it, but like teams need that facilitator person. And that's a conversation we've had here a lot of, like, you don't get a team going until someone says, all right, I'm going to find the space. I'm going to schedule something with the coach. Like, this is the day we're doing it. Like, you're invited to come, right? Then people have to show up, which is the other tricky part of that. But there's a lot of thankless work that goes into sort of the facilitation of that. But that person's starting to move into being a producer. And we talk a lot about improv actors. We talk a lot about improv directors. We don't really talk about like improv producers. And yeah, I think it's great to have disposable income to do it. You know, in Philadelphia, a lot of the improvisers aren't actors. So some of those conversations are a little bit different. Some of them are, you know, same issues everywhere for people struggling. And I think that's all sort of fair. But if you're going to do an indie show, right, you kind of have to think about, well, how much is the space going to be? What kind of show am I going to do? How am I okay just losing this money and just putting on a show together? Or how do I get it back? And I'm kind of fascinated by the improv production side of things, because I don't think we talk about it a lot.
It's something I enjoy doing mostly. And there's occasionally nights where I'm feeling responsible for a crowd showing up or not, but we have the advantage of being an indie scene with low expectations from the participants. So when a good crowd does show up, they're super excited. And it does from time to time. We've kind of starting to learn a little bit about how to book shows to do it, but it's not an emphasis that I have. Like, I know a class show occasionally is likely to bring something. I know, of course, a name, someone known in the local improv community is likely to bring something. And I know four big groups have the advantage of just friends of friends likely to have some confluence of people showing up. But Cody, space is important.
Oh, yeah. And I want to get, there's a lot of little tiny topics I want to get to. But before we completely leave, because Jamie asked for that indie team definition and then I started going other places. You had a team that did a residency run at the West Side Comedy Theater.
Yeah.
It is a little more kind of indie now, but still kind of like you have a set night at a set theater. Tell me about some of the pros and cons between having that run versus doing your more your indie night. What did you enjoy? What did you not enjoy as much? Just kind of, or just, I don't know.
It's interesting because it's more like it's been along a path where that was sort of the beginning. We had done maybe 3 months of shows, maybe a little more before we got that residency at Fanatic Salon is where we do a lot of stuff. And that was still sort of a group. We had kind of two, it's a whole thing. We had two groups that were meeting as one, rehearsing as one, but performing kind of separately. And we determined like who's on which group kind of spontaneously. And it was an interesting experiment that we decided we just want one group. And it was kind of that experience was where that happened, because suddenly it's like one half of the group is sort of on this residency team, which half and why, and like then how does that work out. And that was a very interesting, unique part of it that makes it hard to describe to compare to what's happened since. But it really solidified, I think, what we're doing as a group, and we came out with a new sort of directional purpose that we all agreed on, and kind of then became the eight people that is that group now, Space Eater. And so we still go for those auditions, and just we've cut it close on a couple, been like right there, and they're like whatever choice points, and feel fine about it. It took a little while, I think, for the group to decide they feel fine about that. It was some difference in opinion of the feeling of and there still is like the relevance of like we're a West Side Residents team. It's means a little more maybe to some people.
Don't you think that's
being in that group and being now in that sort of social intersection with the people who are a part of that, but it's not much different than what we do.
And Cody, don't you think that it's less important for you? Maybe I'll just talk about you. We can't speak for your team.
Yeah, sure.
For you, because you have provided yourself a ton of other performance opportunities, where if that was your only chance to perform.
Yeah. A big difference. And quite frankly, it's like, I would rather personally just go out and perform on a Friday night than a Monday, but that's just a day preference for me. That's just like weekday kind of thing. Just the vibe of how I feel. But I would love it, and we're still trying. I got that group and the musical group that are both auditioning, and it's a great opportunity. I love the whole system. It's amazing. And it made West Side become an indie venue, like instantly coming out of the pandemic. Before there was in that sense of definition, before there was a funding of the stage, a selection of the teams, a crafting of the teams, an artistic director, like a specific alignment of why there's a team on, being defined by another entity. And to me, the only difference really in like what I would consider indie is just that. This is people who've self-assembled and decided to, even that residency program now, it's people who've self-assembled, decided to go for the residency and get it. Now, there's a payout there, right? And there's they'll get a check. They don't have to put any money on the line really. And they get a check if there's a house, right? So that's interesting. And I'm lucky enough, and speaking of like the indie differences, is kind of where I was kind of getting earlier. The venue that I get to go to is flexible with me because I use money for rehearsals there. So they've got that coming where it wasn't there before. And so the nights that we do shows, there's not like make the house or pay me the difference. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen. Now, the flip side is true. We've sold over that, and it's not like I get a check. But so like there's like no money on the table in a way in that sense, right? Which is interesting. And I usually lose a little like dollars on the night because of just fees that I pay for the event tickets and I go donation on what's in the cooler, right? So
Jamie, what's coming up for you?
So many things that now I've forgotten each one of them.
I know.
Come back to me. I want to formulate a thought.
Yeah, of course. I'm curious, how many emails are you getting a week, a month, Cody, with teams wanting to jump on at your every other week at Fanatic Salon?
It's interesting. Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot at all. There's only been a few that have hit me up because I exist in some spreadsheet that some person has posted somewhere. And the rest are, I mean, it's interesting. Maybe a half dozen, because otherwise I'm already kind of like reached out to people that know that it exists.
Yeah.
And then when I do, it's kind of like, I'll say like, when I do, it's usually like, well, we got 2.5 months out and we'll put you on that. And people are like, that's a long time. I'm like, yeah, it's just how many shows we do, and twice a month, that's all. And there's two slots because I always sandwich between the two groups I'm a part of,
which is,
I'm putting on a show, so I have perfect stage time.
Perfect. No, I love that.
But yeah.
So I was thinking, I remembered my thought now, going back to improv producers, why is it so difficult for people to produce anything? I'll speak from personal experience, and maybe this is just me and the circles I run in, but I know that if I don't put it together, it doesn't happen. It does not happen if I don't do it. I'm not sure what that is, because I've tested that with some groups where I'm just like, all right, I'm just gonna fade to the background and see if anything happens. I haven't heard from those people since. It's crazy. So I'm like, but they're happy to do it if I put it together, but they won't put any effort. I really don't understand it. Maybe it's a personality thing, but do you guys have theories about why people can't send out a group email and schedule?
Hold on really quick, because you're talking about me, people like me. That has been one of the cool benefits, not the reason, a cool benefit around being around people like Cody and you, Jamie, is you get shit done. I've said that about you forever, Jamie, and Cody too. If I send Cody a text or an email, it's getting done. And I always liken that from this person's perspective, the one who can't send the emails or can't do the stuff, is like, you two have like, I don't know. This is where my brain goes. You two have like regular, like smart people jobs. And so it might not feel like a big to do to organize a couple of people.
It's another spreadsheet in the day of thousands.
I can't make a spreadsheet. Just that, literally, I cannot do that, Sam Miller. I don't know how to make a spreadsheet. Oh. And so like, yeah, it's shit like that. Those little tiny things that prevent me from moving forward. I mean, I could learn how to do it, that's for sure. There's something that seems so monumental about doing stuff like that. So it is so refreshing to be around people like Jamie and Cody, get this shit done.
Yeah, I also get shit done, just to be clear. but I mean, the thing I've found is, you know, there are fewer people who are willing to lead than people who are excited to kind of like jump on board stuff. And I was talking to someone about this, and I think a trap of this sort of stuff is waiting for those other people to also lead, or waiting for those other people. I'm like, no, you've got to say like, I am doing this thing and you are welcome to join me or not, but like, I am doing it. So I'm going to do it and you can come with me, but I'm still going to do it. And I do think there's a lot to what you're saying, Chris, of like people who maybe have experience in offices scheduling things and are comfortable sending meetings and like following up on stuff like that. It is a lot of work. But I don't think it's unique to improv to have this producer problem, right? I mean, you all live in Los Angeles. How many people talk about doing something and does it ever materialize for any kind of artistic project and any kind of artistic endeavor ever, right?
Guys, it's true in software development. I'll have to tell you that. Like, I am rare in software development. I'm rare there too. And it leads to different roles and opportunities within that world. It's not unique to art. Our software is sort of art.
Sam, last night I sent out a text to Jamie. Hey, or was it this morning? No, it was last night. Hey, we should make some kind of video. And then he's like, great, what do you have in mind? I said, I don't know. Just,
I'm going to read the text. Hold on. I'm going to pull it up. He sends this last night at 6:17 p.m. I wonder if we should shoot something at some point. A short little video, maybe. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I said, hey, why not? What do you have in mind? Chris says, zero things yet. Thanks for listening.
But here's what I want to say. I think that's a classic. That's actually perfect. Me and Jamie, which is, I'm like, I get a little spark at 6:17 p.m. from where? I don't know. A little, this would be cool. So I hit up my friend who, his question is like, great, what do you want to do? Like, he's already ready to get on board. And I love him so much for that, Jamie. Thank you. And then I fucking just bailed.
Well, I will challenge you both. The Hot Clown Company out of Chicago is doing a Hot Clown Film Festival. And they were originally doing a deadline of November 15th, but it's been extended to March 15th. And they're going to have a film festival in August. The founder of the Hot Clown Company was recently on Chad Damiani's podcast. Give that a listen. I forget their name, but that was really cool kind of hearing them talk about and their goals with this film festival. And they really want to like push the aesthetics of clowning and clown on film. So if anyone is interested, try to do something. I mean, very recently, I got some friends together. We shot something in my house on the cameras that I own. I've been lazy about editing it, but now it's not due November 15th. So we'll see. I'll get to it eventually. But Jamie, like we made a lot of videos during the pandemic. I mean, again, I think it's worth noting if you have the privilege to have some of this equipment to shoot stuff, if you have the privilege of a space that you can use with like pretty easy access, it's a lot easier to produce this stuff. But you still just have to like schedule a day. You just have to schedule a time. You just have to show up. And I think it's the people who show up again and again and again and who like make those own opportunities for themselves that end up getting the most out of it. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, Chris. Yeah.
I want to ask you, Chris, before we leave this little specific subject, what is it? What is the block for you? Like you have an idea for something. There's a desire to do something. What specifically is the block? You have the idea and then what? You don't know how, you don't know if people will care enough. You're like, what's holding you back? I'm just fascinated by it.
I mean, this is one of those topics that I'm getting tired of hearing myself talk about or think about because it's like, I need to make moves already. It's that block, whatever that is, I picture it, I can see this wall in front of me. It really has prevented me from doing a lot of things in my life, to be honest. So what it is, it's made up of a couple of components, but it's, I mean, it goes from like actual things, like I don't know how to edit a video to the, like, no one's gonna like this stuff or what I have to say isn't funny or isn't worth saying. And then back to the other one, I don't know a guy with two cameras. And then back to the other one, if you made this, then what? You think you're some kind of filmmaker or something, you fucking idiot? Then back to the other one. You can't call your dermatologist. You think you're going to call a location, place? You're going to call some gas station to see if they would rent you their place for the night? It's all of that combined that constantly, and I'm working on it. I really am, but it's like, it's the technical, like the literal and then the self-worth stuff that really bogs me down.
I have a genuine follow-up question. Why can't you call your dermatologist?
Anxiety. And dermatologist is just like, it could be anybody, right? It could be even calling for a pizza or something. Like, I don't know. I just get really like stuttery and anxious on the phone. It's just like something I need to like, I am working on whatever. So I mean, there's this duo I was working with for a while. They're like, we can't really afford your fee. Is there something we can work out? I was like, huh. First of all, to me, that was such a brave question. It's like, well, if you could make the location near me and like during the times that work best for me. And one of the people on this team, she was so awesome. I mean, she emailed 100 places, called 10 of them, landed a deal with one and then called to renegotiate even with this people. I was like, what? Like that. And she got it. And then I was coaching them. That felt, I was like floored. And she looked at me like, I don't know, like, it's not fun, but you just got to do it. You know, like, I'm like, you didn't cry. You weren't crying. Like that's, and I feel like neither, I don't think anybody, Sam, Jamie or Cody probably struggles with that particular block like I do. I mean, Cody, I've even watched, thanks for asking, Jamie, and I am working on it. Cody, I've watched you go from hosting people in your backyard to now literally putting on a blazer and hosting the evening. So also, you've had no prior experience of being a show host. And you just look at you
take like a year of poetry that was really, really bad. And in college is about as close as I got to anything like this.
And now you do it. And now you're doing kind of, you were doing the producing, that's the emails and the phone calls and the money, but also the creative producing as well, like the hosting and the gathering and stuff. That's really, fascinating.
Yeah. A modicum of curation, just in terms of like, oh, what would this fit best on the schedule? We've got our lovely format with Requiem inviting a guest star. Is it someone who also has a show that night or not? Like, what's that working like? The guest check-in, you know, everything. Drama at the guest check-in. Texts aren't received.
And then what about showing up with that blazer and talking to the audience? What's your
That's fun. That's interesting. I have no idea what I'm doing. I've honestly, like, since I've started doing the more stuff on stage, I've thought slightly a little bit more about my general appearance.
That's interesting.
Requiem has a style, stage black usually. And I'm usually the only one kind of violating because my pants are matching my blazer. But it's fun. That's kind of cool. It just feels kind of fun and, you know, trying to come in with the right energy. I listened to like your episode that kind of covered hosting a little bit. And you mentioned like someone had this kind of energy of a little bit like a car salesperson. I was like, oh God, I might have some of that energy.
I don't think so.
But it's just something that I kind of went back. I was like, well, no, that doesn't feel like me. It's like, yeah, but the suit though. Like there's a certain point where it's like, it's no tie, it's, you know, t-shirt, blazer. And I've actually gotten feedback from one person in the community at some point that was like, I didn't even know how much you'd be into this sort of stuff because you're so corporate. The manner of just dress in general, just showing up for shows in the past, I didn't even really think about it that much. Mm-hmm. And so I often like wonder how far, but I want to like be presentational, and it's been great. I've enjoyed it. But that sometimes those little thoughts do come into my mind, if anything.
Of course.
But keeping it short and simple is my goal. And knowing it's a small house, you know, it's 50 people max. And knowing it's not, you know, 100, maybe, you know, that's part of it. But it's been a great exercise in just kind of like realizing public speaking right in front of people, off the cuff, knowing only very little and having very little to need to say.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat.
Sam, I imagine Philly is almost all indie. Actually, I bailed off that question because as I was asking it, maybe I don't know the answer. How much indie improv are you seeing, doing? What's available out there?
Yeah, there's a strong indie scene, I'll say. But I think there's certainly room for people wanting more shows. It's changed a little bit recently, but you know, last year we have Comedy Sports, which is not indie, right? Comedy Sports is all house teams. They have their sort of like main team. They also are doing long form stuff. FIT, the Philly Improv Theater, was producing shows last year, but it was very much like a hybrid model. There were a couple house teams, there were a lot of indie teams. We would get like 30 to 40 or 50 submissions a month for our time slots, and we would try to program our night that way. They recently moved and no longer have a performance space, so that's kind of gone away. Crossroads Comedy is offering classes but doesn't own a stage space, so they're renting some space when they do shows, and they do some monthly stuff, but they have a fairly core group of people, although I think they're starting to allow more indie in. We have a nice community center that just opened that's trying to be a little bit more of an indie hub, and then there's some really cool like bars. We just won a cage match a couple of weeks ago and have another one coming up called Tattooed Moms. It's a really fun place with like really, really just punk vibe, and then another place where it's sort of like more bar prov, but there is a stage, which is nice. So, you know, there are a lot of indie shows, there are a lot of indie teams. It is a lot of sort of people who are doing it for fun, as opposed to, you know, I know when Jamie has recently kind of produced his short form show, it's a little bit more of a theatrical experience, right? And so even as you're talking, Cody, about like wearing a blazer, I'm sort of like, oh yeah, like there is a spectrum here of the indie show. We did one in like a WeWork-ish kind of space during the Philadelphia Free Fringe Festival. So it's like, you can do improv anywhere. So like, why aren't we doing Heralds in the square? Why aren't we out on the street doing a Herald? Wouldn't that be an indie show? Like why that could be valid. It could be fun to do for kids too. But it's a fun scene here. I mean, like, it's, there've been a lot of articles about like stand up, doing like apartment shows. And I think there are a couple of apartment shows. I think a quote was going around recently where someone said, like, is it really improv if you're not doing it in a dark, sweaty basement? So I think there are a lot of people around, but it's tough because, you know, Philly's a little bit smaller than LA. You have to have people putting this stuff together. And that you have to have people in the community who are willing to step up to produce stuff. And there are a lot of people doing it, but there's probably room for a couple more.
Jamie, that schedule is so wonky, but you're doing shows, a run of shows at Impro. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm probably wording that wrong. How would you say, is that, well, I guess what I'm getting at though, is that like, you've obviously done your share of indie stuff. You've performed over at IFTP. You have had back to back West Side residency. I used to go watch you and Sam perform for Just the Other Team. And now you have this more kind of established theater, the Impro stuff that they're spending some money on some marketing, some production. Where do you land on all this stuff? What's your experience with this?
The Liam and I were talking about this with respect to West Side. We just, especially coming out of the short form shows, which are so much work to put on, to sell out like 100-seat theater and to market it and to get 10 people organized enough to like be there on time and tell them the format of the show and do all the thing. It's so much work. I'm just grateful to have a place where I can just show up and do some improv and go home. Like, it's so nice to have it produced by somebody else, just to kind of walk on, be a goofball for 30 minutes and then leave, and then just, that's so refreshing within the mix of all the shit that I have to produce as well. So I'm really enjoying being cast. So, you know, the West Side is a residency thing. Liam and I auditioned for it, but the Impro, I auditioned for that as well, but I got cast and put together by the director of the show in two different shows. And that's, again, been really nice. We just had a rehearsal last night. I didn't have to schedule it. I just show up. The director has everything planned out that she wants to go through and has a vision for the show and is trying to like help curate it. And it's just really nice to kind of like be a piece of her puzzle rather than me trying to also put the puzzle together while it's, so I enjoy the whole spectrum of it. Because it is fun to produce something from A to Z and have it be completely your vision as best as possible within, you know, certain like financial and space constraints. But it's also nice just to like fucking show up and do improv with that. I don't have to do all the hard work for. So you asked earlier at the beginning of the episode, what, you know, is an indie scene important or something like that? It's hugely important. I mean, it's necessary, I think, because there's no house teams without the indie, you know, the chance to come up on an indie team. But it also, I think, gives improv a bad name. Because a lot of indie is very low quality and not well produced. And so if you're out for a date night and you see, you know, Joe Blow's improv show on Eventbrite and you and your girlfriend want to go out, that might be your last time ever seeing an improv show, you know? So it's a mixed bag, as with everything.
Check this out.
Yeah.
Yes. Cody and I are going to say the same thing. Jamie, we had a show on Monday, which went smashingly well, the live direct. And then after that was the jam. And I usually don't participate in the jam, but Lloyd asked if I would, you know, jump in. Cool. Cody was there. He watched the show. He's going to jam it up. And well, Cody, why don't you tell him?
Well, yeah. So at some point, it's a couple, and they get up and they're sort of like checking out and leaving the establishment. And I think at this point, for the first time, our host, Lloyd Alquist there, noticed this person. Said, wait, that's like the MMA heavyweight champion of the world. Just sitting here watching our show. Joe Jones, I believe his name is, so we get that right.
John Jones.
Yeah. And John, and he's there. With, you know, and I'm watching him occasionally because I'm like, I notice when there's someone who's just showed up and they're a tourist and they're at the jam and they're not performing. And it does happen because it is Santa Monica. There was another couple in the back, by the way. Anyway, I'm watching him. He's chuckling from time to time. I'm watching her. She's like, what is this? Why am I here? Why did you bring me here? She has this look of just utter boredom on her face and like kind of is leaning over and eventually convinces him, let's time to go. That is an example of showing. If they would have shown up 2 hours earlier,
exactly,
they would have seen something that blew their mind. But instead, they show up and it's the middle of like people who've had maybe zero training.
And then John Jones is like, "Oh, that's improv?
Yeah.
Okay. Don't need to see that ever again."
That's right. And then he tells all of his celebrity friends. Then MMA now bans improv.
That's right.
You know, they won't sponsor anything. That whole pipeline is gone. You know, the MMA to improv pipeline.
What's interesting is as we're talking, I got a text from somebody offering me a date, asking if I have a team, if I want to bring a team to do a show at the Clubhouse, which is a big indie facility here in Los Angeles.
Huge.
I got to tell you, when I see that, my stomach kind of drops. I'm like, ugh. I don't have a spark of like performance opportunity where I do when I get invited to play at the Groundlings. Instead, I'm like, eesh. And
it's a gym, right? Like Clubhouse is just where you go to get your reps. And that's, I think, to Jamie's point a little bit, like I'm very thankful to a lot of the indie shows I did. And some of them were to very small crowds, still can be to very small crowds, but you know, there are two sides of that value, right? There's the value to the audience and to the community, and there's the value to the performer. And Clubhouse, for better or worse, and like I haven't been in Los Angeles in a number of years now, but like even 5 years ago, I would say, kind of had a reputation as like a performance for the performers. And that's tough, right? That's tough for everyone.
There's a key lock on the door. You need to know the code to get into the place. It's in a strip mall in Los Angeles.
That is interesting. The idea of playing for performers versus playing for a regular audience would be, I think I typically feel like I do more shows in front of performers, because I was just thinking, Sam, if I confirmed on this show, I would know going in I'm doing a show for performers and might perform differently, might do some like inside baseball stuff or moves that people would recognize. Where last week we did Pretty Pretty Pony, we moved to a new time slot at 8 p.m. It's our Armando, our ASCAT. We moved from 10 p.m. to after a decade at 10 p.m. We're now at 8 p.m. Huge house. And I told Jamie, as soon as I stepped up on stage and looked out towards the audience, I got these butterflies of like, whoa, this is like these are people, like not performers. Performers are people. And I felt a little weird. And I actually, Sam, now that I think about it, I remember my wires getting crossed a little bit. Like, oh, I can't do the no look alley-oop improv move because they're not going to get it or care. So like, mm-hmm. I kind of had to shift the play a little bit towards more like, you heard him tell the story. Watch how I kind of do reenact the same story.
Yeah. It was something that was both refreshing and challenging when I came to Philly, because it's actually a really big theater town, right? Like America's oldest theater. A lot of people, you know, New York productions that are going on the road will come through here. So there's a lot of actors, a lot of theaters. There's a community that will go out to those shows. All right, well, now I got to get them to come to an improv show. And sometimes they'll show up and it's a show for performers by performers. And you're like, ah, like they're going to go home and talk about that one. And they're like, I didn't really get it. Like they were laughing at something. And like, I remember that experience when I first started watching some shows where I was like, there's something going on here that I just don't understand. And it's just gone right over my head. And that can be really, really challenging as an audience member.
Cody, I feel like you kind of fast-tracked your training from the typical one night a week at Westside, you know, which is where, and you go through all the levels, to putting together multiple teams that rehearse multiple days a week, and then having these performances twice a month, and maybe a third one in there somewhere else.
Yeah.
Your training went from, again, 3 hours to a whole bunch of hours. Do you feel a growth? Do you feel
I do feel the growth. I also feel the ensemble growth in a couple of ways. I also sometimes feel a little bit of maybe everyone's not growing at the same pace.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And you see feelings of levels. And I have, you know, I have a very healthy dose of imposter syndrome in this entire area, but I think that's normal. And I'm in a, you know, career path where that's also been pretty normal for everyone. So I just deal with that. But I do see shows where I'm like, oh my God, they're so good. I'm not there yet. And some of them aren't that. I've been doing it about as long as me. Some of them have been doing it for 2 decades. And I don't know what point it gelled. But there's a lot coming together for me. And I know when I'm in good scenes, I know when I walk away from good scenes, and there's more and more of those. And I know the same kind of for shows, but I can feel pretty good about a show and see a couple people didn't. And
yeah, I've also seen,
I may or may not agree with.
I've seen this on you too, Cody, where before it's common for younger improvisers to say that scene was either good or bad, where you'll be like, felt good, got heady, forced this one moment, returned and did good. Like you're even starting to find those little levels within the scene where it's not just black and white. Yeah. And
also, yeah, it's anticipating in advance where I hope to get every time. Right, like, right. Oh, it could go this way, but let's not. Let's keep it let's all keep it in the right direction. Whatever that right direction may be. Or push it wrong just for the fun of it to find out where that wrong is.
Sorry, I keep interrupting.
Oh no, my air conditioner cut on. Let me turn you up a little bit.
I don't want to forget to mention this. As somebody who's kind of like launched themselves into the scene and then has created a part of it, you also, like we've established, you have a full-time job and you also have a partner who seems to be very, very supportive of all these endeavors. I don't know how much you want to talk about her.
No, super into it. Melanie, she is great. She comes out to every show we produce. She doesn't come to every improv show I go to, and she doesn't sit through every show that night. She'll be out in the courtyard a bit.
Yeah.
She's become a part of Requiem. She does the sound. We have sound cued scenes. She's in the booth now doing that. She has, you know, her own musical classical piano training in her past and loves that I'm in a musical improv group. She had a grandfather that was in Chinese theater, sort of form of opera, a very specific kind of form. And it reminds her of that. And generally this is just the best person in the world anyway. Everyone needs a Melanie in their life, best friend, partner in crime and everything else. Tremendously valuable there. And I know that's not true for everyone.
Right.
I know there are people who are asking the family if the schedule allows them to go to rehearsal, whatever that means.
Exactly.
And I don't really have that. There's no, that's not like a, there's not even like a boundary there that we are conscious of.
That's incredible. The only person who I know moves more freely in improv than you is Jamie Parkinen, who will just send me a text, be like, want to go to New York for a workshop?
Yeah, that's just me. I don't travel a lot. If I see that and I'm like, oh my God, they're going to Ireland.
Jamie, I'll meet you in New York.
Cody, are you noticing, how do I wear this? You said you noticed your own growth, you noticed your team's growth or lack thereof. Is the whole operation growing as well? Is it becoming smoother, easier? Are you still satisfied enough to continue to want to do this?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've got goals that I haven't really focused on too much. Do have a full-time job. Only have so much for this in three groups producing the shows, but I want to be able to get to a point where I can put a bigger show on with not necessarily just improv. I think I've talked to you a little bit about this before. I mean, especially with kind of like the form that Requiem has, where it can veer more toward dramatic and abstract and artistic. I've wanted to blend somehow improv with art and sort of a live duo, like more classical instrument duo, or maybe like a little crossover classical and modern instrumentation kind of duo, to accompany and do that thing we do right now with music that we're just playing that we find snippets of, but actually have that live. I just keep envisioning this, but I'm like, yeah, but I need to be able to do consistently great shows, you know, show after show, and start to get a bigger audience and a bigger following than has happened now. There are shows that are like 50 people showed up and they weren't all improvisers. This is great at the 50 person theater, but this kind of thing is like, I don't know, and I got to put something together for something much bigger. So it's a goal that could be 5 years, or some avalanche of stuff could happen and it could be sooner. So meanwhile, this is a wonderful venue and nothing in the way of it. And I've asked for another Friday and they're like, hey, come on, we need to at least have other groups here. There are interested people that want to do other things, not just your show every year. It's not your theater. So I'm running into
Sam, I do want to say, I booked some rehearsal space there recently. And the response from the theater owner, who's a great person, is like, well, Cody typically has first dibs on the calendar. So if he doesn't want him, you can take him.
Have you checked with Cody first?
That's right. That's what I had to do. I had to say, yeah. I checked with Cody. He said, it's okay.
That's very funny. I mean, it's cool that you're talking about that, Cody, because I think I'm going to a similar place and I've kind of, I'll keep putting like Philly Fringe Festival on my calendar where it's, but I'm also kind of thinking like, okay, at what point am I no longer producing an improv show, but I'm actually producing a theater show? And like, is there a difference between those things? Can we describe the difference between those things? I think impro is actually a really interesting example of this, because impro does shows at like the Broad Theater in costume, right? And like, yes, it's improvised, but like, are they producing an improv show or are they producing a play at that point that just happens to be improvised? So where do y'all see the line there?
Yeah.
I mean, Jamie, you're doing this right now.
It's really tough, and I'm Mr. Definition, so it's hard to answer because it certainly feels more theatrical. We just had a rehearsal last night. I won't go into details because nobody wants to hear it, but it's a improvised World War II 1 hour show. So it's not really for laughs. There might be a chuckle here or there, but it's a dramatic improvised play, really. And so it doesn't feel like improv. Saying improv feels wrong to just the feelings and the associations I connect to improv. The show on Monday, that was an improv show. That was an improv show. It had our twist. Chris live directed it, super fun. But that was an improv show. This doesn't feel like that. Maybe because there is better acting, you know, more attention to stage direction and how I don't know. It just feels like it's next level. And so it therefore does feel theatrical. Improv does feel middle to low on the artistic scale, where once you hit those upper echelons of what's improvised performance, it does feel theatrical. And so I would say, yeah, it feels more like a play because we're hitting those upper levels, which is cool.
Cody, that sounds like, I had never put this together, but like his show right now, it sounds like you would be perfect for that cast.
It's something that's in the potential for me, for sure. Yeah. Impro and everything I hear about it. Quite honestly, it's just, well, I wish it was this side of the 405.
Yeah, it's in Wilson
Lee. Well, it's a big town.
I know why Cody's not going to improv.
Yeah, I know. Which, you know, listen, on our way out here, I think it's worth mentioning here that Los Angeles is big, but Cody is on the west side of town. And there are not, I know there are other little theaters or little things happening, but for the most part, I always say that you single-handedly built the indie scene of the West Side. Now, like, I know there are other things going on.
Not at all.
But that is a point that maybe our listeners need to understand is like, there are plenty of improvisers on the West Side. Most of them don't want to go anywhere. They don't want to leave the West Side.
And that's just weird. And I get most everywhere I go on an electric bicycle.
Yes.
And it might make it up there, but it'd be treacherous.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, that's a whole nother episode, but like the type of people who are performing, who I've met in my own classes or Cody are different than the other side of LA, the East Side LA people who maybe want to do this professionally, are performers. And it's been really fun to spend time over here with like professionals who just want to have fun.
And maybe a little more, but we'll just see.
And maybe a little more. That's actually a good point. I think people who are signing up for a one-on-one class are there for a little fun. The ones that get hooked, you're like, oh, and maybe a little more. I think that's you're absolutely right, Cody. Yeah. Anything else here? Cody, anything else you want to mention before we tap out?
Yeah, I don't have any full summation thoughts. What's the episode about? What's the title?
I don't know. Maybe it'll be indie improv. Maybe it'll be Cody Saunders on indie improv. Maybe it'll just be episode 81, Cody Saunders. As we've already established, I don't make those choices. I can't do that work, Cody.
Well, because James, I produce the show. I have
for three or four years,
you know. I set up the schedule of when we're going to record. I edit the episodes. I put in the music. I figure out the guests. Hey, and when I don't, guess what? We take an 8-month break where we don't do any episodes. And then when I say, hey, you guys, let's do another episode, everybody's on board.
That's great. No, okay. Gotcha. No, that I identify with so much. You know, that you said earlier, it's not like that, Chris, something that I'll reemphasize. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on the West Side. I did improv, invited to do stuff with Rogue Improv in a church, whatever room. There was the cross on the back of the wall there. So that was fun. Workshops everywhere. The Electric Lodge, I believe, in Venice is still doing, they're back doing shows as well. I don't know if the Crow has done any improv, but they're definitely a great space at the Bergamot Station art kind of area.
Yeah.
And that's one where I'm like, well, I ought to be checking that out, because that's kind of starting to get a little closer to the idea I have. They do a lot of stand up. They do they're very like inclusive, forward kind of community, like come here, if you're not just identifying as a white male, come here tonight and do some stand up comedy, And they also do some family stuff. So there's a lot that is still going on west of the 405. I just wish there was more, and maybe I wish I had more gumption to go to things more on the east side.
What was the show? I feel like before IO West, so I think like mid late 90s, wasn't there like an indie show on the Santa Monica Pier that people were doing, or something in that area? Am I getting that wrong? Maybe some of our listeners remember this sort of thing, but I thought there was something about, like, you know, before a theater gets established in a city, right? Like it's going to be a little of that indie flavor, right?
Yeah. I don't know.
Really, for me,
I would love.
Remember first show I saw after the pandemic was at the park, at Griffith Park, large area, and it was Lemon Pepper Wet, a great local group. They do a lot of Fridays now, and so shows at UCB with comedians. And some improv, and someone mentioned children. You mentioned earlier, Sam, like children and family friendly and kind of public, and this was not. The stand-ups were doing jokes that they would do at late night television, and there's children running behind the stage doing sword fighting while these very adult, comedians are doing very adult jokes, and the improvisers are improvising inspired by those very adult sets. I thought that was cute, very LA, and it was a very fun experience. They haven't done much in the Griffith Park since, but back at UCB.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about street prof sometime, because that's probably a little bit different from indie, but...
Street prof.
I know people were doing that as well right after the pandemic, going to the Promenade in Santa Monica and just doing improv. I heard a few groups do that.
But isn't it telling that as soon as they didn't have to, they stopped?
Yes.
Telling for who?
Cody, thanks so much for being here today, bud.
No, thanks a lot. I've enjoyed the experience greatly. That's one thing I'll say.